This is an iHeart podcast. Guaranteed human.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, let's have a talk about Iran. John Carney is going to join us, discuss the economic stakes of this. I'm sure Lee Smith has many strong feelings. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. All right, so it's been 48 hours now of all this Iran stuff going on, and I'm sure you've experienced the exact same thing I experienced for the last 48 hours. Here's something for you. For, I think, like 10 hours yesterday, I just shut my phone off and put it in a drawer because every single person with my phone number is texting me, what do you think, what do you think, what do you think? Well, here's what I think. Okay, so I decided I wanted to wait until now to lay it all out, and let me explain why. We'll get to everything else in a moment. There is an old quote, and I'll be honest with you, I spent some time trying to track down who said it. The quote's attributed to about 1,000 different people, so who cares who said it? It is truth. Or it is true. In war, the first casualty is the truth. This is not unique to the modern era. This is not unique to the cell phone era, social media, things like that. Since war has begun, everyone lies when it begins. And there are so many different reasons for the lies. You want to cover things up for the enemy. You don't want to let them know what you're doing. You want your own people to feel better about things. You want the enemy to feel worse about things. There are all kinds of reasons for it. But whenever any kind of war has kicked off, everybody is lying at all times. The side you're rooting for is lying. The side you're rooting against is lying. They're lying for different reasons. Everybody is lying about everything at all times. So let me, before we get into everything, Trump's statement and my thoughts on all this, let me go ahead and open up with this. Just calm down. You don't have to go online and believe every video or picture. There will be so much bad information floating around out there. You don't have to go online and vomit out every single feeling. You can. Obviously, you're your own person. You're free to do so. You can sit back and watch and wait. And may I suggest, pray. These are dangerous times. All times are dangerous times, but it's a little spicy out there. Now, for the updates. Here's what Donald Trump got up today. I would highly recommend you watch all 8 minutes of it. I'm not going to play you all 8 minutes here, but Donald Trump today got up and announced the attack.
Our objective is to defend the American people by eliminating imminent threats from the Iranian regime, a vicious group of very hard, terrible people. Its menacing activities directly endanger the United States, our troops, our bases overseas, and our allies throughout the world. For 47 years, the Iranian regime has chanted death to America and waged an unending campaign of bloodshed and mass murder, targeting the United States, our troops, and the innocent people in many, many countries. It has always been the policy of the United States, in particular, my administration, that this terrorist regime can never have a nuclear weapon. I'll say it again, they can never have a nuclear weapon. They've rejected every opportunity to renounce their nuclear ambitions, and we can't take it anymore.
Okay. We are tired of this regime, 47 years. They're chanting death to America. They're killing our troops. It's time to take them out. Also, we have to take out their nuclear weapons. That's what he said. here is what he said about objectives. And I think this part is particularly important because, like I said, I spent the weekend not drowning in social media videos on my phone and vomiting out my feelings, just trying to talk to people. Went out to dinner with some people, talking to people. What do people think? I got a lot of different perspectives on how normal people are feeling about this. I got a lot of rah-rah, let's kill them all, let God sort them out. I got a lot of, hey, I'm cautious. I got a lot of, I'm not really sure why. In fact, I had many people ask me, why? And not even critically, they just wanted to know why. All right, well, here's the commander-in-chief talking about the objectives. What are we trying to do here?
Objectives are clear. First, we're destroying Iran's missile capabilities, and you see that happening on an hourly basis, and their capacity to produce brand new ones and pretty good ones they make. Second, we're annihilating their navy. We've knocked out already 10 ships. They're at the bottom of the sea. Third, we're ensuring that the world's number one sponsor of terror can never obtain a nuclear weapon, never going to have a nuclear weapon. I said that from the beginning. They're never going to have a nuclear weapon. They were on the road to getting one legitimately through a deal that was signed foolishly by our country. And finally, we're ensuring that the Iranian regime cannot continue to arm, fund, and direct terrorist armies outside of their borders. And we thought we had a deal, but then they backed out, and they came back, and we thought we had a deal, and they backed out. I said, you can't deal with these people. You got to do it the right way.
Okay. Now let's fast forward to the losses already. Let's do keep this in mind. This is why we also need to pray. There have already been losses. We've already had young people who serve in our military. Their families, maybe as we speak, are getting the knock on the door that every family with someone serving dreads. Here was Donald Trump talking about it.
U.S. military service members have been killed in action. As one nation, we grieve for the true American patriots who have made the ultimate sacrifice for our nation, even as we continue the righteous mission for which they gave their lives. We pray for the full recovery of the wounded and send our immense love and eternal gratitude to the families of the fallen. And sadly, there will likely be more before it ends. That's the way it is, likely be more, but we'll do everything possible where that won't be the case. But America will avenge their deaths and deliver the most punishing blow to the terrorists who have waged war against basically civilization.
Well, please say a prayer for those families. The ones we've already lost, the ones to come, they need to be covered in your prayer. They're unimaginable anguish. Now, the Trump administration, they are well aware of the criticisms of past American foreign policy. We have had a problem in this country, a bad problem. 50 years we've had this problem, war. Since Vietnam, we've had this problem where we get mired in places without crystal clear objectives, and then we can't seem to get out. It's easy to drop a couple bombs. It's easy. You start intertwining yourself in a region, maybe even you started out with the right idea, it's just difficult for a variety of reasons to get out. The Trump administration is very clearly aware of this. Secretary of War Pete Hegseth got up today, tried to assure the American people that would not be the case here.
To the media outlets and political left screaming endless wars, stop. This is not Iraq. This is not endless. I was there for both. Our generation knows better, and so does this president. He called the last 20 years of nation-building wars dumb, and he's right. This is the opposite. This operation is a clear, devastating, decisive mission. Destroy the missile threat, destroy the Navy, no nukes. Turns out the regime who chanted death to America and death to Israel was gifted death from America and death from Israel. This is not a so-called regime change war, but the regime sure did change, and the world is better off for it.
Okay. Now, maybe you've already picked up on my tone from now, but here's where I stand on all this. First of all, it's okay however you feel about it. Maybe you rightfully know that Iran has been an evil regime, killing people for a very long time, and maybe you think, good, screw them, kill them all, they've got it coming. Totally understandable. Maybe you are quite jaded on American foreign policy, America getting involved in places that don't necessarily seem to be for America. It's, again, all completely understandable. All these things are understandable. Here's where I stand on the whole thing. Any population of any country at any point in history, here's what the regime in charge knows, or at least should know, and the Trump administration at least appears to know this. Depending on the circumstances of the country at the time war is kicked off, there is always a finite amount of tolerance the public will have for it. And it's going to, like I said, it depends on a variety of circumstances. The enemy, what the economy's like. There's a million different factors that play into that. But one thing, it is not up for debate. The public's tolerance for this kind of thing is always finite. Even in World War II, which obviously America were very, very proud of, and we should be very, very proud of it. By the time we got to Iwo Jima in World War II, the administration, the presidential administration, they were mortified by the casualties coming out of Iwo Jima, not just because of the brave men losing their lives. They were reading the polling numbers. The American public, they were about over it. Now, this is after the whole country was mad about Pearl Harbor. Just a few years later, they were done watching body bags. No matter the circumstance, the public's tolerance for this is finite. So you get an operation like Venezuela. Almost sounds like Sicario Part 3. We send in Delta Force into downtown Venezuela and we snatch up the president and his wife. We don't lose a single man. Sounds good. Everybody's on board. You send the Mexicans in to take out El Mencho. Navy SEALs did the training. Sounds good. Everyone's on board. You launch what is obviously a regime change war. You can't say it's not when you took out their leaders. You launch a regime change war on the other side of the world with domestic enemies who will exploit every American casualty, as you know they will. We're on a clock. I'm sure the Trump administration knows this, but we are most definitely on a clock. If you and I, by the time we meet a week from now on, I'm right, don't get wrong, I'll be back tomorrow. If you and I are talking about what we did in Iran last week, as in we're already done, the bombs have dropped, the troops are on their way home, minimal loss of lives from here on out, then the Trump administration, they are politically going to get away with this because the public will simply forgive, forget, and they'll move on. I don't know about forgive, but the public will forget and they'll move on. If, however, we do get bogged down, and you can make all the promises in the world, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, hopefully sooner, but you can make all the promises in the world, but every administration in the past has made those promises, and none of them have turned out to be true. You make all the promises in the world, but if a month from now, 2 months from now, we're still waking up every morning, and there might be on our phones, we're still waking up every morning and we see another American has died and the objectives aren't crystal clear and people still have record credit card debt, the Trump administration is going to see the public turn against them very, very, very quickly. Some of that is just intolerance based on the last 50 years of experience in American foreign policy. Essentially, what I'm saying is I am very, very cautious. I am watching, I am praying, I am hoping. I'm very hesitant, I'm very cautious right now. The Trump administration, I'm hoping they're just doing what they think is right. And I suppose that is the case. They are playing an extremely dangerous game right now. A very, very dangerous game. A game that could very well see communists come back to power in the United States of America. I hope they understand that fully. Let's pray for the safety of our troops. Let's pray for swift victory. We are in it now. I'll be with you. I'll be honest with you every step of the way. Watch, listen, and pray, all right? All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. Now, Lee Smith, I am sure, has been dancing on the rooftops since Iran got bombed smithereens. So let's get from his perspective what all this is about, why it's important. Let's hear that from Lee. Before we get to Lee, though, let's do this. Do you have any idea how much estrogen is in the water? This is because of so many women being on birth control now. There's just toxic levels of estrogen in the water. It's not getting treated out of the water. They're looking right now and they're marveling at the lack of testosterone we have as a society. They just can't believe the numbers. It's shocking. We have to reverse that. We have to fight against it. That's what Chalk is about. It's about reversing that number. A male vitality stack from Chalk is what you need flowing through your veins. 20% increase in your testosterone in 90 days with natural herbal supplements, not needles in your arm. Get it done naturally, but be proactive about it. You're about to have better energy, better sleep, better mood. Remember what it was like when you were younger. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back. Okay, so I'm sure Lee Smith has been smiling. I'm sure the edges of his mouth have been touching his ears all weekend long. The Ayatollah is dead. Iran, at least the current regime, appears to be on its heels. So let's find out who did what here. This is obviously a joint operation between America, Israel, I mean, everybody, UAE, Saudi Arabia, everyone's getting in on the party here. Lee Smith, author of wonderful books, including The Strong Horse. We'll talk about many things with Lee. First of all, Lee, the Ayatollah is dead. How did this happen and who killed him?
Well, it looks like it was a joint operation with the United States Armed Forces and the Israeli Defense Forces. There's reports out now that it was actually the Israelis are world-renowned for their human intelligence, but it appears that the CIA had the source that was following Khamenei. I mean, the Mossad had a lot of other people lined up who worked for the formerly supreme leader, but it was the United States that was apparently reportedly responsible for following and tagging Khamenei himself.
Okay, where was he? How'd we get him? How'd this thing go down?
I mean, I think that one of the reasons that they leapt at the opportunity was the fact that Khamenei was meeting with top officials, and both the Americans and the Israelis figured this is a fantastic opportunity to get a whole bunch of bad guys at the same time. We will use fewer munitions than we normally will to get 10, 12, 15, 20 of these guys, so let's go after them now. And, you know, I have to say, Jesse, you started off by saying that I've been smiling from ear to ear. Yeah, I mean, I have to say I'm gratified that the President of the United States has made good on something he's been talking about virtually since the 1979 takeover of the U.S. Embassy in Tehran. And I think I think it's a very important moment for Americans. It's part of our history. That chapter of our history is now closed. And this also helps ensures our peace, or further ensures our peace and advances our prosperity. So I think it's an all-around excellent thing.
Okay, let's talk about where we're going from here. It's one thing to cheer about the Ayatollah being dead. It's another thing entirely to rebuild a government in a country over there. Where are we going? How long is it going to take to get there? What are the actual objectives? Things are a little vague.
Yeah, I think it's unlikely that we're going to spend an awful lot of time nation building in Iran. I think right now the You know, you've heard the president say, well, you know, some of the second, third choices for leadership, they're all dead. So I think right now the plan is to knock out as much of the regime as possible, knock out as much of the IRGC as possible. And if the Iranian opposition wants to take power, then they're going to have to go out into the street again. You know, this is what the president said Saturday morning after the strikes. So I think that the administration is going to look and see what plays out. They're going to be following it very closely. No doubt there's going to be a whole bunch of people talking to the White House, talking to the State Department, talking to the Pentagon, talking to the CIA, trying to throw their hat in the ring, whether the United States will be the final arbiter of who rules Iran. I find that unlikely. This is going to be figured out on the streets of Iran. This is going to be figured out in lots of different places, and the White House is certainly going to be watching it. But again, I think that one thing we can be certain we're not looking at, and that is a multi-year commitment with not only Pentagon officials on the ground, but State Department officials on the ground and NGO workers as well, trying to teach Iranians what surrealist art is all about and trying to explain Marcel Duchamp and what the urinal looks like. Pretty sure that's not where we're heading with this.
Okay, good for that. All right, do we have some idea of who we want this person to be? Lee, there has to be someone in mind. I have a hard time believing the Trump administration would just wipe out the leadership without at least a horse or two. Is there someone we like?
Well, I mean, this is what Trump said. He was looking at a couple different people, as you know, and he joked about it. He joked about it today, saying, "Well, you know, there's a job opening." He said, "Look, even in Iran, I'm creating jobs." So, no, the issue is this, and this is a very significant issue, and I'm certain the White House was aware of this. It's an IRGC regime. So even when we're talking about eliminating the top, the Ayatollah, and we're talking about eliminating a whole cohort of mullahs, the IRGC is everywhere throughout Iran's economy, throughout the Iranian society. So again, it's going to be, I imagine what's going to happen is there's going to be some sort of fight, some sort of split in the IRGC. Someone's going to take the reins in their hands. I hope the United States doesn't move until that's figured out. The administration has already made its point. If you build nuclear weapons when we tell you not to, and if you target Americans, if you target our allies, we're going to bomb you. If you do it, we're going to do it again. This is the point that Trump made in June. He said, if they keep rebuilding that nuclear weapons facilities, I'll bomb them again. And sure enough, he did. So while Donald Trump is in office, whoever takes charge of Iran or whatever factions, whatever cadres take charge, they can be sure that Donald Trump is a man of his word.
Lee, talk to me about this nuclear program in Iran. Why wouldn't they just let it go? I mean, you do have other resources in the country. That program is the source of so many sanctions that get levied on the Iranian regime, even if you're a bunch of evil Islamist scumbags. Why not just let the nuclear program go and do other stuff?
Well, let's go back a little bit. I mean, it's always been an important American interest since the development of the nuclear bomb. It's been one of the major national security points of the United States has been to stop proliferation. We've done that with allies when we were able to. The United States wasn't happy when the Israelis got a nuclear weapon. We prevented the Taiwanese from getting a nuclear weapon and other actors. Also, we don't want other players to get a nuclear weapon. This all changed with Barack Obama, when Barack Obama made a deal with a terrorist state to legalize their nuclear weapons program. That was a very, very bad thing. As far as the Trump administration going in and saying, yeah, you know, we're going to cut you a break, we'll give you nuclear fuel forever, do this or that, and the Iranians said no. Look, frankly, the Islamic Republic, such as it was, had a point. It's very hard to go in there and tell a regime, look, by the way, you have no say over your allies, meaning your proxies, even though they're terrorists. You have no say over your self-defense, meaning your nuclear weapons program. It's a violation of their sovereignty. So the Islamic Republic wasn't necessarily wrong to say, no, we're not going to do it. It looks nuts in hindsight, but they had a point. It's their national sovereignty at stake. The problem with Iran is, the problem with that regime was, they're insane. So they cannot allowed to be have the diff, the they cannot be allowed to have the different things they said they wanted to have, which is terror proxies in Lebanon, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, as well as a nuclear weapons program that would provide an umbrella for these terror proxies to operate, as well as the regime itself. So again, the fact that the Iranians put their foot down is not that strange. The big problem was is that the United States, as the responsible world power, not as the world's policeman, but as the responsible world's power that's able to do something about keeping the world free of lunatics, it was the United States' role. It was Donald Trump's role in particular, not any American policymaker. Donald Trump is the first one, the only one, who stood up and did something. He said, this can't be allowed to happen. And let's remember how long Donald Trump has been saying this, right? Since at least his 2000 book, The America We Deserve, talking about the problems with Iran's nuclear problem. He said it on campaign three times on all of his three different presidential campaigns. And Jesse, maybe you've seen videos circulating today on social media about Donald Trump speaking in 1980, how terrible it was that the Iranians took over the embassy and held Americans hostage for, what was it, 444 days. So this has been on Donald Trump's mind for a very long time, and we are truly blessed as Americans that Donald Trump is our president, and he took care of not just an outstanding blood debt, but he also moved to keep Americans safe and prosperous. God bless him.
Lee, thank you, my brother. Come back soon. All right. Well, it almost seems vulgar when people are dying, when Americans are dying, to discuss the economics of it. But I want to know what this means for your wallet, for my wallet. What does it mean here at home? They're closing the Strait of Hormuz, all these things. What do those things mean? John Carney's going to join us in a moment. We'll go over some of those things. Before we do that, let's do this. Everybody's waving an American flag right now. Well, some of us are, and that's good. Do you remember what Pure Talk, my cell phone company, do you remember what they did last Independence Day? They sent out American flags to veterans. While Verizon, AT&T, and T-Mobile were out there doing things like sponsoring child drag queen shows, my cell phone company was sending out American flags to veterans. It is such a difference when you switch to Pure Talk. It's not just that you save money. It's not just that you get to deal with Americans who speak English. You don't have to feel dirty when you pay your bill. Stop feeling dirty. Go to puretalk.com/JesseTV and make the switch. We'll be back. Okay, so that's all the political angles of it, and Iran and America and pro and con, but we have other fish to fry here. We have record national debt, record credit card debt, and we don't need all this impacting your wallet or mine. Let's talk to John Carney about all that, economics and finance editor with the wonderful Breitbart, John Carney. Okay, John, obviously all wars, it's a global economy, are going to have economic ramifications of some kind. Doing the best crystal ball prediction you can, what's all this going to mean for me and my money?
So, yeah, first of all, I hate having to talk about this because, of course, you know, what happens in war is a lot more important than what happens to our wallets, but it does matter. So what we're going to see is a immediate move up in oil prices, natural gas prices. This will mean higher gasoline prices and higher electricity prices. It will be a drag on the economy, but I don't think it will be inflationary. So I don't think that we're going to see prices around the economy, other things start to move up. We will see a drag from, frankly, the Strait of Hormuz will be, at least for some time, constrained, if not shut down. We are seeing already refineries and processing plants all around the Persian Gulf be damaged by the Iranian retaliation. So we're going to see some economic cost. It'll mostly show up at the gas pump, but probably not for very long. if this goes as planned, we probably will see some move up, but we have oil now from Venezuela. Our allies in the Gulf are saying they're going to pump more oil. The U.S. is itself a giant oil-producing machine, and natural gas, of course, as well. So we are no longer exposed to, you know, when I was young and there would be, you know, a minor political uproar in, much less a war, in the Persian Gulf, oil would shoot to the moon. I don't think that's going to happen this time. I don't think we're going to see $100, $125, $150 barrel of oil. I think we're going to see more like $80 barrel of oil, and even that for just a short time.
All right, John, let's rewind here, and I'm going to ask you to do something which is difficult for people to do. I'm going to ask you to take your IQ and cut it in half, if you would. Strait of Hormuz, for so many people, I was trying to explain this to my son this weekend. What is it? Where is it? Why is it important? Why did you even reference it? It seems like it's really far away. I need you to do me a 101 on this strait. Just go ahead and take the whole show over.
Absolutely. So it is a narrow body of water that basically separates the Persian Gulf from the Indian Ocean, but really from the rest of the world. So a lot of the world's oil comes from areas around the Persian Gulf. It gets loaded onto tankers. It has to go through a narrow strip of water called the Strait of Hormuz. Think of it in some ways like if you're, I use this on my children who are learning US history, that it is kind of the Erie Canal of oil. It is the thing that brings oil from where it originates to the rest of the world. And it is very important to global oil supplies. However, it is not as important as it used to be. It used to be absolutely crucial. It's a lot less important now. We also have the ability that we didn't have before through drone technology to really actually make it much harder for anyone, especially Iran, to try to cut off this, you know, to mine it, to put annoying ships on it. We can blow up any, you know, any major naval ship that enters the Strait of Hormuz and tries to mess with us. The real problem is actually more like something close to piracy, where you have either mines placed in the strait or you know, small attack ships attacking the tankers. That will make the tankers, you know, these aren't combat tankers. These are, you know, ships full of seamen, merchant marines. They don't want to end up in a war. And so getting them through there is very important. But I think we have the military and technological capacity to keep that from being cut off for any long period of time.
Okay, let's go to Venezuela, because you mentioned Venezuela. It's hard not to make a connection that Venezuela became kind of ours in a way about five yes. minutes before we started bombing Iran. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so this is really important. Venezuela was part of, I'll call it like the dark oil powers of the world. It was basically Venezuela and Iran that were, one, a huge supplier to China, but two, were not suppliers to the rest of the world. Venezuelan oil was highly sanctioned, and so it really wasn't feeding into the global oil prices, and production was way down from where it could be. We are bringing Venezuela back online, and so an advantage is over the medium to long term, whatever happens in Iran will matter a lot less now that the world has access to Venezuelan oil once again.
John, tell me about refining, because this is a conversation you've had before. Again, this is another one of those things that people get confused on, because we don't teach anybody anything in school anymore. It's one thing to pull oil out of the ground. It's another thing entirely to have oil be usable for people. You have to refine it. Where are we refining all this oil? Venezuelan oil, which from what I understand is filthy dirty. American oil, I know we lost a lot of our refining capacity. Where is it being refined now? Is that in trouble at all?
Well, so the Venezuelan and American oil is not in trouble because it gets refined actually in U.S. We're really good. Actually, we have refineries built to be able to refine Venezuelan oil. We will be really good at that. The big threat is really Iranian missiles destroying the refineries in the Middle East. That really does need to be refined out in that area, because it is a different refining process. Oil, everybody knows, there's lots of different grades of oil. Some of it is easier to turn into gasoline. Some of it is more complicated. But when we go to the gas station and we have like three grades of gasoline and you can plug any one of them into your car. By the way, you should probably always choose the cheaper one. The other ones are, your new cars don't need the high grade gasoline. But but it's not like that. You can't just press a button and pump whatever oil. You need the right kind of oil in the right refinery. The risk is if Iranian missiles destroy refineries, which by the way, they're not yet. They have shut down some refineries, but that's more of, from what I'm told, a cautionary measure as the places are being attacked. They're still going to be operational again. But the danger is if those things get shut down for a long time, then it will be harder to, even if you know the Saudis are pumping oil out of the ground, it gets harder to make it useful to the rest of the world if the refining capabilities are destroyed.
John, let's talk about China. I've heard a lot of chatter about what we did in Venezuela and what we're doing in Iran is really putting China in a bad spot. Is that true? And if so, why? What's going on?
Yeah, China is heavily dependent on imported energy. They need oil. They were getting it from Iran and Venezuela. Not being able to get it from Iran and Venezuela really puts them in a much more precarious spot economically. But look, we're not going to cut China off of oil. That's not anybody's plan. But what it means is if China were to do something militarily aggressive, invade Taiwan, they would be a lot more vulnerable if they cannot get oil out of these regimes in Venezuela and Iran. We are making that much more difficult. We've made it impossible. They're not getting the oil in a conflict out of Venezuela. They could buy it at market prices today. That's fine. And the same thing with Iran. Hopefully, when this all comes to a conclusion, they will no longer have a client state in Iran that will be, you know, sort of their oil well anymore. And that will make them much more hesitant to be able to prosecute any military attacks on any of their neighbors.
Okay, that leads me to Russia. Why don't they just go buy it from the Ruskies?
You know, they can. They can buy oil from the Russians. But China has a disincentive to be too dependent on the Russians, partly just out of history. They didn't like the time period in which their economy was very dependent on the Soviet economy. Even when they were both communists, they actually really felt uncomfortable being so dependent on their then wealthier Soviet neighbors. They don't want to be dependent on Russia again, in part because Putin won't always be in charge there. They don't know the future of Russia. But also they just want to be able to not have to look to Russia for permission to do things around the world, where if they're heavily dependent on Russia, they would be. So I think China looks at it and says, we'd rather not be dependent on Russia. They probably increasingly are going to be dependent on Russia if they get cut off of Iran. They've already been cut off of Venezuela.
John, thank you, my man. I appreciate you. All right. We're going to talk about something that I believe we should be focusing on hard. And we found out another reason we should be focusing hard on it over the weekend. Terrible, terrible case out of Austin, Texas. We're going to talk about immigration, the foreigners we have here. Before we get to that, let's talk about this. Sleeping. It's just, when you have a good night's sleep, you are in every way a completely different person than when you have a bad one. At least I am. Maybe when you were younger, you'd get away with that. But man, if you run into me and I've had 5 hours of sleep, it's not the same Jesse as who gets 8 hours of sleep. It's just not. But what do you do? When there's everything you take to sleep makes you feel groggy when you wake up. You don't feel rested except for Dream Powder from Beam. That's why you need natural things. Dream Powder from Beam is just a cup of hot chocolate, but it's all natural stuff in it. It's reishi and magnesium and melatonin and these things. You just sip on a delicious cup of hot chocolate And when you go to sleep, you sleep like an itty-bitty baby. Try it. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. Natural ingredients, natural sleep, waking up every day feeling great. We'll be back. Okay, so as you know, I like to stay focused here at home, and I'll give you a heads up right now. We've already discussed it as a show. This is not going to become war correspondent show where every day we're giving you updates on what's going on in Iran. I care about America. That is my focus. It's always been my focus. I care about what's going on here. But look, we have a problem here, and it's already hitting us here at home. Over the weekend, there was horrible story. You know what? I was going to show you a video. I didn't even want to show you a video. That there was a horrible story in Austin, Texas over the weekend. My sister used to live in Austin, Texas. I talked to her about it. There's a bar. Apparently, it's a very well-to-do bar, nice part of town, that kind of a thing. And some Islamist apparently strolls in there and murders a few people. Had, you know, a Property of Allah shirt on. And he was an immigrant from Senegal. And he was a legal immigrant from Senegal. We have way too many foreigners in this country, and I'm not just talking about the illegal immigrants. We have a country that has been flooded, overwhelmed with foreigners decade after decade after decade after decade. And it is going to take a massive project to get these people out of our country. And now we're seeing the result of some of that. When you fight a war across the globe, when you've imported enough savages inside, your own people die because of it. I want the mass deportation of foreigners. That is my focus right now. I pray to God it's the Trump administration's focus, because that is what will actually save the United States of America from ruin. Get these monsters out of my freaking country, so I can go to a bar in Austin on Saturday without Property of Allah killing me while I'm there. All right. We need a light in the mood. Next. All right. It's time to lighten the mood. So here's my light in the mood. John Cornyn is losing the primary in Texas. And maybe you're not from Texas. Maybe it doesn't matter to you. I'm telling you right now, this matters for every single person who complains about rhinos and the GOP and this and that. John Cornyn is an extremely powerful United States senator. If we can defeat him in a primary, it will put the rest of the losers in the GOP Senate on notice that they can't keep screwing us time and time and time again. If you happen to be in Texas, primary day is tomorrow. Show up and vote. I'll see you tomorrow.
Why should you listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand?
We're not boring. A lot of news is boring.
And tedious.
And depressing.
And makes you angry. You don't want to live your life like that.
Hey, I'm Jack Armstrong. He's Joe Getty.
We're Armstrong and Getty.
We try to bring you the truth.
And help you figure out this crazy modern world.
How about something about a comedic tone?
We have a winner.
Yes. Listen to Armstrong and Getty On Demand on the iHeartRadio app,
Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.